Welcome to Keeping It Real with Frankie D, an Italian-American podcast, the very first Italian-American podcast, and the home of your Italian-American moment. We can always be heard at ItalianAmericanLife.com, on iTunes, Stitcher, your podcast app. Please like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, and connect with us on LinkedIn. Today's episode is with author Mike De Lucia, who wrote Madness, The Man Who Changed Basketball, a very important figure in the Italian-American sports world. Mike, welcome to the show. I really appreciate you being here. And I'm going to tell you, when I finished reading your book, I couldn't wait to interview you. I was so excited about this topic.
I am so glad to be here, Frankie. When I received your email a little bit late, I got it about a week later because it was on you contacted me through my website and I didn't check it regularly back then. But ever since the day that we spoke originally, I've been extremely excited to be interviewed here on your show.
Well, thank you. Thank you. I had told you that this all stemmed from, for me, a famous painting called Legends that I grew up with because I'm in Chicago, you're in New York. Well, in Chicago, someone started a National Italian American Sports Hall of Fame that just happened to be located literally a mile from where I grew up. And they had this Legends painting that was by a local Chicago guy, Carlo Beninani, who did a painting of Italian American athletes. Well, as a kid, I loved being Italian American and I love sports. So this was the perfect combination. And there was always this basketball player in the painting. There was a basketball player. And I kind of knew the name, but for some reason, I never searched it out. And I'm a very curious guy. I'm a very observant kind of a guy. And then when I saw that you wrote this book about this player, well, I had to get it. And then as soon as I got it, as much as I'm a really slow reader, I flew through your book because I loved it. I was shocked to know and to learn about this Angelo Hank Luisetti. And like I said, I couldn't wait to interview you. So finally, here we are.
Yeah, and as you know, I now have a poster, that very same poster in my house because of you. I didn't know about that great, and I have it on my house, and I have a little thing next to it with all the people's names and what they did. I mean, some of them are obvious, you know, the DiMaggio and, you know, Vince Lombardi and so on, and Yogi Berra, so on and so forth. But some of them, I didn't know all of them. So, you know, I looked them all up. I saw who they were and what they did. I love that poster.
A must piece of art for every Italian-American household. And yes. I guess apparently you just go online and type in Legends and Carlo Beninani and you can buy the poster. So
they're available. I mean,
they are available. Yes. Yes. Okay, Mike, tell me about, before we get into the book and all the books you've written, tell me about your Italian family background.
My Italian family background. My mother and father were both born of Italian immigrants. So they're first generation. I grew up in a family that we were so proud to be Italian. And my father's the kind of a guy who he will tell you everything about Italians. You could be, he's like the guy from Big Fat Greek's Wedding.
That's what I was thinking of, the father.
Yeah, he is that way. You know, when he constantly, he would say to me, Michael, we taught the world, Michael. Don't you forget that. We taught the world. And he would go into all the different things that Italian Americans have done. So we grew up very proud.
Where did you grow up?
We grew up in Pelham Bay section of the Bronx, a neighborhood not too far from where J-Lo grew up.
A heavy Italian-American neighborhood in those days, at least?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. J-Lo's neighborhood really wasn't as rough as she claimed it to be, actually.
Okay.
She went to an all-girls Catholic high school, you know, right in my neighborhood. Run by the nuns and so on and so forth. So, you know, she lived in the Castle Hill section, which was about a 10-minute drive from ours. It was an Italian-Irish neighborhood.
All right. And where is your family? Where do you trace the roots in Italy to?
Benevento is one section, and Naples.
Okay, so Benevento, That's a city outside of Naples?
Yes. It's
in the same region, the Campania region?
Fairly close.
So you're all Napolitanos, so to speak.
And we have some of the family moved up north. We have some family in Varese, and we have some family in Milano. So
Varese, is that as far north as Milano, or?
It's probably farther north. It's
really?
Like a border, you know.
Oh, okay. And you've been to Italy?
9 times.
Nine times?
And 10 times next week I'm going to go back.
That's awesome. So you must love it.
I love Italy. And at this point, I'm tired of, you know, as wonderful as, you know, seeing the Colosseum is and the Sistine Chapel. I've seen them so many times that now I really am starting to get into some of the finer aspects. Not finer, but less known.
More real everyday life, Italian life, right?
Yeah. We went on a tour. A friend of mine runs great tours to Italy. I met her because I'm a traveler. And as a high school teacher, I bring kids overseas. I've been to Italy a couple of times and ran into this woman who she took on my family for a family reunion in Italy. And we did lots of, you know, great things. And we actually went to a little town. One of her things is she wanted you to experience the local cuisine. So everywhere we went, and one plate and one restaurant, we went with all the great Italian foods you think of. You know what was on when that was on the menu? Horse meat.
What's that?
Horse meat.
Horse meat. Oh, okay.
Which I tried.
Can I guess where you were?
Which I tried. Go ahead, give it a shot.
In Puglia when this happened?
No. It's one of the places I've not been yet, but that is on my radar. But we were, geez, now that I'm thinking about it, wasn't quite south, to be honest with you. We were more, I think it was more mid.
And how was it?
Tough. it wasn't, you know, because we were there, I figured I'd give it a shot. I'm in Italy, there's a local cuisine here, or one of the local things.
Sure, why not try it? Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, I'm glad you love Italy, and I'm glad you're so into your Italian-American background. That's awesome. That really is. So I understand you're an English teacher, but you're also an author, and you've written many books. Are they all sports-based?
So far, the three that I have out there are. And the next one that I'm writing, it, you know, could be a trilogy, and it's also about baseball. So it's another sports genre, but I have about another five, summaries written. And once I finish this next book, I'm done with sports, probably, you know, permanently. I move on to different genres. This story, actually, to have this baseball story, I've had in my head for about 30 years. And so, you know, I need to get it done. I need to get it out of my system and then move on to some, you know, just different, more, I don't know, deeper.
I get it. Well, okay, so Madness, the book we're here to talk about.
Yeah.
I'm curious, where did this desire to write a book about this Angelo Hank Luisetti come from?
Okay, when I was younger, I wanted to be an actor. I had it all set. I was going to be a film actor, and but one thing that kind of collided with that dream was I got married really young. And I wanted to, you know, get a house. And so my father and my brothers and I and a couple of people that we knew literally built a house. I had a business that I went into thinking, you know what, I'd rather be my own boss this way. I can really concentrate on my acting because it'd be mine. These are all things that a 21-year-old or 22-year-old, you know, you have a different reality. But being an actor is so difficult that you need to be married to that. Like, you know, that's your wife. That's your job. Like, in other words, you wait tables. You have to give everything to that. But when that kind of really came to me, I said, you know, I'm going to have to be like Stallone. I'm going to have to write my own movie, and I'm going to star in it. I'm not selling it to anybody unless I play the lead. And so I was explaining this to the family at our, you know, 2 o'clock Sunday dinner. And I, you know, my father's like, I have the perfect person for you to write about. And I said, who's that? The greatest basketball player that ever lived. And I said, yeah, Hank Luisetti. I was like, who's Hank Lewis Eddy? And if he's the greatest basketball player that ever lived, how come I never heard of him? Well, that's the whole thing. He says, no, not a lot of people know about him because he played basketball in like the 20s or the 30s and he completely changed the game. Before him, basketball was boring. It was dull, you know? And so I was like, all right, you know, sounds interesting. So I took the train and for the next 2 weeks, every day, I went to Manhattan. There was no internet back then. We had encyclopedias, but he wasn't in there. And I started basically researching a ghost. No one knew who he was. I was going through microfilms. I was looking through newspapers. And eventually I started, because he said the 20s or the 30s. And that's a big range. And finally, I hit upon a newspaper, either the New York Times or Daily News, and I saw the name. And then from that point, I had somewhere to go. And then I was copying stuff. I was printing these things out of these old-fashioned, you know, Xerox machines. And I left there in 2 weeks with, you know, a sketch of a story.
And that made you say, I'm going to finish this. I'm going to write this book.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And because, you know, Lewis Eddy never actually made it to the NBA, and I'll get into that in a little bit, reason why, you know, he didn't get into the NBA. There wasn't a lot on him because when Hank Lewis Eddy played, it was only college basketball. So, but I'll get into it, I think, further with the questions when you ask me more about the story, I think.
Okay. Well, I mean, why don't we just explain a little bit who is right this Angelo Hank Lewis Eddy?
Okay. Hank Lewis Eddy is the greatest basketball player that ever lived. And that, and I'm basing that on the fact that nobody has changed or impacted the game as much as he did. Before Lewis Eddy, total scores of basketball games were 20 points, 30 points. And that's because it was a totally different way to play. It was defense-based. It was slow. It had no fan base, which is why it hadn't. Which is why there was no NBA. It wasn't exciting. It had leftover fans from football and baseball season. It was a college sport. It was a school sport like lacrosse. That was it. Hank Lewis Eddy perfected and popularized, among other things, the running one-handed shot in an era when they consider that not to be, that they said that's not real basketball. But there was a slew of other things Lewis Eddy was doing. He was 50 years ahead of his time. They said he jumped in the air so high and stayed up so long, it was like he defied gravity. He used to shoot, he was ambidextrous. He'd shoot the ball with either hand, put the ball in from anywhere on the court. Sometimes they say, without even looking at the basket, he's the first person that was said to dribble behind his back. He dribbled at such high speeds and maintained ball control. Claire B, you know, somebody who you knew, said, I never saw anybody do more things with a ball. Hank Lewis Eddy, again, 50 years ahead of his time. So what happens is this promoter from New York decides to take the best team in the East and put it against the best team in the West. LIU was on a 43-game winning streak. They had a 6'8" center. They were considered to be the greatest basketball team ever assembled.
And this is like 1936?
Yes, 1936.
Okay, so 1936, and Lewis Eddy is from California, correct?
Right. Yeah, he was friends with, you know, kind of, he knew Joe DiMaggio. They were in the same.
Oh, okay. Okay, and he's the son of Italian immigrants.
Right.
Ends up going to Stanford University, which,
right,
I got to be honest with you, just that in itself is like an amazing feat.
Right.
Because, you know, the era of 1936 in Chicago, I don't think too many Italian Americans were going to a Stanford University type. I got to be honest, they weren't even finishing high school.
Right.
You know,
right.
For that era. So, I mean, he went to this fine university and plays basketball there.
Right.
And becomes a three-time All-American at Stanford University.
Right.
Okay. College. So now Stanford goes out to New York.
Right.
And they play
LIU, and everybody is expecting that this team from California is an absolutely fold. They but Claire B said, and I quote him again, he makes a mistake. Instead of going to scout Stanford, because they played Temple, that was the first team they stopped off and played in the East, and Temple was considered the second best team next to LIU. He wanted to stay with his players because he wanted them in top shape. He wouldn't let them go home during the break because this was during the holiday week. He kept them in the Catskills and he wanted to be with them. He wanted them at their best when they stay, when they face Stanford. So he said,
now, in that era, he never saw the guy play, correct? There's no footage, there's no film, there's no newsreels.
Exactly.
There's nothing. It's just word of mouth that, wow, there's this really good player in California.
Right, but he's quoted in saying, and I don't know if it's a direct quote, "I'm concerned about the Italian kid." So anyway, he sends his one of his assistant coaches out to watch them play in Temple. And Stanford beats Temple, you know, really, you know, pretty easily. Everyone, though, all the news reporters except one are predicting that Stanford's going to get slaughtered. Hank Luisetti absolutely destroys LIU in front of their own crowd. It was sold out. There was almost 18,000 people in that place.
Was that at Madison Square Garden?
Madison Square Garden. The fans were starting to root for Luisetti. Now, you know, picture this. You know, you're in Chicago. Can you imagine the Cubs playing the Mets and the Chicago fans rooting for the Mets?
No, not really.
No. So this is what happens in New York. And, you know, I mean, New York, we're pretty crazy about our sports teams, right? The fans were giving him standing ovations because they never saw anybody do the kinds of things that this guy was doing before. So the New York media is eating this up. They start writing stories about how he's shooting with one hand and how he's doing fast breaks. People started to imitate Luisetti. All of a sudden, people started to shoot on the run. They started to shoot with one hand. Scores started to go up. Basketball started to get hot. And with that, it developed an audience. And with the audience comes the NBA. But Hank Luisetti, when the NBA actually did form, when he got out of the service in World War II, he almost dies in World War II. He gets spiral meningitis. He was in a coma for like two months. He went down to like 90-something pounds. The sulfur drugs healed him, but they affected his heart. So the doctors told him, you know, you'll be fine, but you can't chance playing professional basketball. Like, those days are over.
How tall of a man was he?
6'3".
6'3". So a 6'3 man was down to about 90-something pounds.
Yes. He almost died. He almost died.
I believe it.
And the Knicks actually tried to get him to come and play for them on their first team, but he turned them down. And
so he never played in the NBA.
Never played in the NBA. But let me tell you this. Hank Luisetti is so respected that when they began the Basketball Hall of Fame, the first person they inducted in was Dr. James Naismith, basketball's inventor. The number two person that they inducted into the Basketball Hall of Fame was Angelo Hank Luisetti.
That's amazing.
That's how good he was.
So is this just now? Okay, so back in the day, I remember even when I was a kid, I believe, college freshmen couldn't play with the varsity.
Correct.
Okay, so Angelo plays 3 years at Stanford. Does he play after Stanford in any capacity?
Okay. After Stanford, he's so famous. He was the first national celebrity basketball player. He was so big that he got signed to a movie contract with MGM to play in a movie with Betty Grable as himself.
Who's a big star, Betty Grable.
And he plays himself as a basketball player. And because he got paid to play basketball, when the movie was over, they suspended him because he was considered a minor and he got paid. So he wasn't allowed to play in any, you know, kind of teams for like, I think, a year. And then he played on, you know, some teams for a little while.
What do you call it?
Like Jim Thorpe. Like he was...
Right.
You know, his medals were taken away because he got paid, I think, $2 to play baseball one time. Back then, it was a lot different. So Luisetti didn't play on a basketball court the following year. March Madness, by the way, starts, which is why I call the book Madness, because he really, you know, started March Madness. It started in 1939, the year after he graduated. So it was kind of happening. But Stanford was the first unofficial national champion in 1936 when they – beat LIU, and then it was no fluke as they came back in 1937. They beat LIU and NYU or CCNY in back-to-back nights at the Garden, so it was no fluke.
So his life is the epitome of timing, because if he would have lived 5 years later, you know, if he doesn't go in the war, the NBA exists. This guy is a national superstar phenom.
Absolutely.
And a household name.
Yeah, and he was back then, and it wasn't even a professional sport.
It's amazing that he got put in the Hall of Fame just from being a college player.
That's how good he was. Broke scoring records every year. First person to score 50 points in one game.
He was also the best athlete voted at Madison Square Garden, I believe, in 1936.
Most outstanding athlete in 1936, which again, they gave that honor to an outsider, not to one of their own, to Hank Lewis Eddy.
I also saw that he was the first one to do no-look pass, which, yep. You know, when you think about like 1936, I mean, like you said, they just dribbled up the court. They took two hands. They shot the ball standing there. A no-look pass had to be like he was from another planet.
He's been my idol ever since I started researching him back in the 80s.
Okay, speaking of research, so initially you had difficult. Did it get easier later as you had a little bit to go on, or was it just as difficult?
No, what happened was I wrote the story. It was originally a screenplay, and I wrote the story, and you know, I mean, being a nobody, you know, it's not easy. I mean, people get movie scripts all the time. My first version of this was handwritten. I didn't even type it. I didn't know how to type. I wrote it out, and so I had the story done. It went through a bunch of phases, and then when I went back to school at 40 years old, and I took a screenwriting class, and I brought it, you know, there as, you know, my work, and I worked on it, went into another phase. And by that time, I'd already kind of done it all. So when I went on and the internet, you know, was popular, I didn't really change anything. I just kind of left it as it was. So that's why it's historical fiction, because it's based on the accomplishments and the achievements of Hank Lewis Eddy. A lot of the story is fictional.
Did he have children?
Yes.
I assume by now probably grandchildren.
Yes.
Any contact with them?
Yes.
Are they aware of this book?
Oh yeah. It's funny. I did a talk at Stanford University a year ago, May. So in this May, it'll be a year. And just at that time, you know, I started to really kind of reach out for, you know, to try and, you know, family members. And it just so happens that his granddaughter goes to Stanford University a week after I was there. Now tell me that this isn't, you know, a big coincidence. And somebody was like, oh my God, somebody wrote a story about your grandfather. And she went and bought the book. So I just happened to, and it was hard, you know, trying to get any contact with them. I just happened to make a contact with her mom or her dad. No, it was her dad. He didn't pick up the phone. So I was actually doing a book talk at an Italian festival. My phone rings, pick it up, and it's Hank Lewis Eddy's granddaughter. And I just walked away from the table and I just started chatting with her. And she's, you know, she says, I have the book. And so it was, you know, kind of cool. We've been in touch ever since.
So, okay, she was aware of her grandfather's feats, correct?
Yes.
Okay. And obviously, I'm assuming they were pretty much very happy and that you wrote the book about him. And
yeah, I mean, some of the stuff was a little, you know, difficult for them because, you know, I have him, you know, falling in love with you know, with a girl and you know, it's kind of like, you know, your parents or your grandparents thinking of them, you know, romantically involved, you know, with somebody else. It's kind of like weird.
Well,
so
you know, it's funny you bring that up because when I was reading the book, I thought that was real about the girl. And I know she was an Italian girl. And I'm here, I'm reading the book and I'm rooting for him to get with this girl.
Well, you know, he could have had a Connie, you know, I mean, I don't know. And, you know, so from what I read was, you know, he kind of didn't really have a steady girl, but, you know, again, he was a very private guy. He was extremely private. He loved the game, but he did not love the attention. So he tried his best, kind of like DiMaggio, similar.
Yes, it was a very quiet guy, reserved.
Yeah, didn't, you know, so, you know, who knows? So I based a lot of the story on my Italian family and my experience with being Italian and you know, when I get into Christmas Eve and the food that we eat. And it was, his father did have a restaurant, so that, you know, that's true. You know, there's a lot of weaving in and out of truth and fiction. So, you know, where... you know, where that, where those lines are, you know.
He was an only child, or
he was an only child.
He was an only child. Okay.
Yeah.
You know, I think, you know why I think it hit me so hard was, okay, we Italian Americans have a little history with, we have a big history with baseball. Mm-hmm. I mean, huge. I mean, back in the day, you had, you know, the New York Yankees starting 4 out of the 9 starters were Italian Americans. I mean, a right. Huge influence. Obviously, boxing, huge, huge right. Success. Yeah. A little bit in football as well.
Yeah.
Kind of limited with basketball. You know, I think because the game of basketball requires you to be freakishly big and tall, doesn't tend to go with our people. And I know we've had a lot of success as far as coaching, a lot of famous Italian-American right. coaches, mm-hmm. few players here and there, but not a lot. So right. when I read and learned that, oh yeah, by the way, in addition to all of the other tremendous amounts of accomplishments and inventions and things you've done in this world, oh, by the way, the greatest basketball player whoever lived that started it all, an Italian-American. I was just blown away. Like, are you kidding me? That right. this guy was doing things Michael Jordan-like in the 30s, an Italian? I could not believe it.
Yeah, yeah, it's a fascinating story. And he was a fascinating individual. You know, he's the first person to score 50 points in a game. And he didn't want to do it. In fact, when he first got to Stanford, Coach Bunn said, "Why are you only scoring 5 points a game?" Because when he was a playmaker, he was doing all the stuff, all the passing, all the dribbling, and all that. He believed that basketball was a team sport. He did not want to be like the main guy. He didn't want to be in the spotlight. He'd rather give the spotlight to somebody else. But when Bunn got him on Stanford, he said, "You stop holding on to that apple and shoot." And Louis Eddy had to start to go into that position as that player. And anyway, his teammates get together and they're like, let's just, every time Hank passes you the ball, pass it back to him. And so.
Kind of forcing him.
Right, and that's in the book, right? So he passes the ball to somebody, comes back to him. Passes it off, comes back to him again. Eventually calls a timeout. He says, "Guys, look, what are we doing? Stop feeding me. Let's play this game the way it's supposed to be played. All right, everybody claps to get back into it." Hank gets the ball, passes it off, comes right back to him. And everybody was cracking up. They called them the Laughing Boys. His team was dubbed the Laughing Boys. And they were all laughing, you know, on the court. And, you know, and Hank scores his 50 points. And, you know, in an hour.
Like I said earlier, it's unfortunate. You can't go back. You can't timing is timing. And it's unfortunate. The way it worked out, he would have been, it would have been totally a different situation if mm-hmm. it would have been, you know, like I said, 5 to 10 years later. If mm-hmm. he would have done this in 46 and not 36, oh my yeah. God, it would have right. been, you know. And the thing is, the sadness I find is that generations of Italian Americans would have had this other proud outlet.
Right.
And unfortunately, it didn't work out that way. However, if you grab the book Madness, it's not too late to learn who this individual was.
Yeah, I mean, it's people love the book. You know, I have currently 103 reviews on Amazon. They're all 5 stars. It's been reviewed by other people.
And speaking for you, you had a great year in 2019, a lot of awards. International Book Awards finalists, Reader's Favorite International Book Awards Bronze Medal, New Apple Summer eBook Award, Top Shelf Book Award finalist. So you are finding a lot of success with the book. And I hope, like I said, and I mean this from the bottom of my heart, Italian Americans out there, especially the ones that love sports, which a lot of Italian Americans do love sports. It seemed when I was a kid, it just went hand in hand. It seemed like everybody loves sports. So grab this book, read it, and learn about Angelo Hank Luisetta. You will not be disappointed.
Yeah, if you go to my website, booksbymikedelucia.com, or just tap the book. I also have a free download on there. It's about two Italian brothers who play on a baseball team. It's called Settling a Score, and it's a free download. It's a short story. It's like 10, 15 pages, and it's another story. You know, Italians are in it, which brings me to the next thing. And, you know, I am an Italian author, and I write, you know, a lot about Italian so far. And one of the things, and I'm sure, Frank, you know, you're aware of this, is that the Italians in the media were not portrayed in the way we actually are. The media has created this image of Italian Americans as either criminals or uneducated, unrefined goons. That's it, because if you could tell me a movie from the late 70s up until now, which except for Unbroken, and not comedies, because comedies are meant to show Italians, you know, you're supposed to laugh at people in comedy, so that doesn't count. We are always stereotyped. And we're the only nationality, as far as I know, that they still get away with this. We're either in the mafia, we're criminals, we're uneducated, goofy, goonish.
Yeah, Hollywood has not been very kind to us.
No, so it's important to me that this, so beyond the book, you know, we've got to get this story out to the Mets, because Hank Luisetti was educated. He went to Stanford University. He had no connections to organized crime. He's a regular American like you and me and 99% of the Italians out there who are trying to embrace the American dream. And this is all in this book. It's about overcoming all those obstacles. And it's an important piece for Italians. Again, every author wants to sell his book. I mean, of course. But for me, there's this whole other thing that makes me extremely passionate about how Italians are treated. I told you, my father, when we were kids, we grew up thinking the Italians were the greatest thing in the world. And we get out there in the world, and it seems as though the media is painting us as something completely different. Why do you think that we're the fourth most popular European ethnicity? Why do you say that? How come there's been Irish presidents, English presidents, German presidents, no Italian presidents? And it's because I believe the media has brainwashed the masses into thinking that every single Italian has some kind of connection, some way to crime, or that we're not trustworthy, or that we're buffoonish. Really?
There's no doubt. You know, I know that there was one close to running, obviously, Mario Cuomo back in the day. And, you know, he decided not to run. And the problem is, like you say, they start searching. Well, yeah. You know, he could have had a cousin that had an uncle that was in a restaurant that happened to have some other guy that was a mob guy. I mean,
that is the truth. That's why he didn't run.
Right.
He didn't want his family to go through
the scrutiny of it all.
The scrutiny of him and trying to connect him to organized crime. And it's a shame, and it angers me. It really
does. It is a shame, and I do agree with you. And you know, the Hollywood thing, I gotta be honest, part of it is our own fault, because we have Italian American mega superstar directors and producers and people that can make movies, and they, I would hope, would say, for every four mob movies we make, let's throw the community a bone and we'll make one movie about a positive influence.
There have been so many.
Oh, without a doubt. I've said it on some of my other interviews. Giannini the Banker could be a movie. You know, this particular story, I love the idea to make a movie, because a movie will really impact society and open up their eyes about this figure and be another source of pride for Italian Americans. So this would be a wonderful movie to make.
Well, like I kind of shared before, we're actually on the ground level of that right now. So,
I'm crossing my fingers and wishing you the best of luck.
Yeah. Well, we're already talking about it. So
it's, well, that's great. That's great. Well, Mike, first of all, I want to thank your father, because now that I learned from this interview that he is the one that opened up your eyes to write about this figure? Because that's one thing I was very curious about after I read the book, and I thought, how does this guy, where did this come from to write this book about Hank Luisetti? And right. You knew that it was difficult just finding information about him. So, you know, I applaud your father for his pride, and I applaud your father for instilling such pride in you.
Absolutely.
And as an Italian American, thank you. Thank you so much for writing this book, and keep writing, especially about Italian Americans. That's just awesome. And to all my Italian Americans out there, get the book and read the book. Do yourself a favor.
Yeah, and if anybody's connected with any school to try and get this on summer reading lists or outside reading lists, so it goes beyond the Italian community and into the world, and the schools is really the place to do it.
Very good point. If anyone does have access to schools for an outside reading, a summer reading book, that would be great. Contact Mike. You know how to get to Mike. Contact me. I'll contact Mike. Whatever right. You're comfortable with. Please, let's do this together as an Italian-American community to get the book out there, read by all. And if anyone has any film connections, by all means, talk to Mike. What's that website again, Mike?
Booksbymikedelucia.com. And then my email address is the word green, the letter T, books. So greentbooks@gmail.com.
Excellent. Mike, thank you so much for your time. This has been just an awesome interview. And like I said, an awesome book. I love it. And keep doing what you're doing, okay?
All right. Thank you, Frankie.
And as always, remember, stay proud. Thank you.
Just what makes that little old ant think he'll move that rubber tree plant? Anyone knows an ant can't move a rubber tree plant.
But he's got high hopes. He's got high hopes. He's got high apple pie in the sky hopes.
So anytime you're getting low, instead of letting go, just remember that ant. Oops, there goes another rubber tree plant.
Oops, there goes another rubber tree plant.
Oops, there goes another rubber tree plant. Once there was a silly old ram, thought he'd punch a hole in a dam. No one could make that ram scram. He kept butting that dam, 'cause he had high hopes.
He had high hopes.
He had high apple pie in the sky hopes. So anytime you're feeling bad, instead of feeling sad, just remember that ram. Oops, there goes a billion kilowatt dam.
Oops, there goes a billion kilowatt dam.
Oops, there goes a billion kilowatt dam. There goes another problem, Kerplop.
Oops, there goes another problem, Kerplop.
Oops, there goes.